good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whenever it is you're listening to this. You are dialed in to The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulong, managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. I am joined by Steel Curtain radio host Lance Williams. We are recording this before the Thanksgiving holiday in Wake. I keep saying in Wake, Lance. I don't know why, but right before the Steelers take on the Baltimore Ravens in week 13, what is basically a regular season playoff game against the Steelers' arch rival. Now, Lance, the Steelers are coming off an impressive 27-11 victory over their other rival, the kid brother of the AFC North, the Cleveland Browns. This game is for the whole ball of wax, if you will, as far as rivalries go. This is an important game and one of the rare games in the history of the rivalry between the Steelers and the Ravens in which both teams are below 500. Yet it is, in typical fashion, the second time these two teams will meet with this one having playoff implications on the line. That isn't rare, Lance. Not rare at all between these two franchises, yet the two of them are down a little bit. They didn't start off particularly well. Baltimore lost 4 of 5 up until last week when Geno Smith basically gave them a victory at M&T Bank Stadium. And the Steelers started off 0-4 and are 5-2 since then, leading into the key divisional matchup that we have in front of us. The Steelers beat the Ravens in week 7. 19-16 on the second consecutive game-winning field goal by Sean Sweezum to beat the Ravens, previous one coming the previous season in M&T Bank Stadium when Charlie Batch heroically led the Steelers down the field to the game-winning touchdown, or game-winning field goal. What's your feeling on this, Lance? The rivalry in general, what do we have in this game? This is a big one, right? Records aside.
You know, with rivalries like this, and you look at other rivalries like Ohio State, Michigan in college football, you look at the Yankees versus the Red Sox or the Cubs, Cardinals, or Giants, Dodgers. When you have this much animosity between the teams, allegedly the organizations and the fans, it doesn't really matter what the records are between the teams. It's going to be compelling. And when you put it on a Thursday night on Thanksgiving in prime time after everyone has had their turducken, their ham, their chicken, their fish, their stuffing, their yams, pumpkin, sweet potato pie, and all of the fixings, it just makes for downright good theater and TV. So I expect it's going to be a hard-hitting, physical, fantastic game. And typically, a lot of times when you get underachieving teams that are average and about the same, you know, you really get physical matchups that tend to be kind of entertaining at times. So I expect a knockdown, drag out, and a very entertaining ball game.
2 points in that I think are spot on. One, it's theater. That's why this game is on Thanksgiving night. The issue that I have with that is it's bad theater. It's not quite the understudies replacing the main characters, but short week football is garbage football. In many ways, you'll hear it from the players, the fans who watch it casually that don't have a vested interest in either team. It's low-grade football. We saw the Steelers go to Tennessee last year in a short week and play terribly on the road. I don't think Tennessee played particularly well in that game either. Short week football is not good football. It's Thanksgiving, though. It's prime time, so people expect that heightened level of ability. At what point can you say the play on the field being inferior to the theater and the buildup around it is acceptable? Isn't that kind of what the NFL is trying to do here?
I would agree in general about the whole Thursday night games. I think they've sort of been a fiasco this year. In addition to your point, you add the fact that the Steelers are the only team this year to play on the road and then play on the road on the Thursday the following week. So that really puts the Steelers at a deficit. But somehow, man, when you just put Ravens, Steelers together, somehow it just always writes itself, fixes itself, and the games become compelling, regardless of whether the fan bases or the nation, believe that any of either one of these teams, I should say, have a ghost of a chance of winning a Super Bowl. It's still Ravens, Steelers, or Steelers, Ravens, depending on your lens and which fan of which team you are.
You can't disagree with the rivalry aspect of it. I'm curious, though. What is it? Ravens-Steelers or Steelers-Ravens? Isn't that pretty much a there's no preference between the two, I don't think. I don't think being first or second it makes one team more important or less important. Which is it? Which sounds better in your mind?
Well, being a Steeler fan and a, you know, from Pittsburgh, I'm always putting Steelers in front. And given the fact that the Steelers have the most championships until that, or I should say Super Bowls, excuse me, Green Bay Packer fans, until someone has seven, it's Steelers in front at all times.
I'm all right with that, except for I like the feeling of team at Steelers, which is usually what I think of. So I think I default more to Ravens-Steelers than I do Steelers-Ravens, but the point is the same. Mix it around, flip it up however you want. This is the best rivalry in the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers will travel to the Baltimore Ravens to take on the defending Super Bowl champions in Week 13. Kickoff at, is it 7:30? 7:30 Eastern time, I believe, or is it 8:30 Eastern time?
I'm changing time zones for Thanksgiving, so I'm all lost. So I don't know. I'm sure I'll be in a partial food coma, so whenever it comes on, it just comes on.
Figured you were going to Vegas or something. What are you doing?
Yes, that is. Well, I guess that is same time zone. See how confused I am? I thought Vegas was mountain or something.
Isn't it? It could be. I don't even know.
It could be.
I guess I didn't think of that. I'm not an expert on time zones, in case you haven't figured that out. Not really an expert on anything. What I do know is on Behind the Steel Curtain today, today as in Tuesday, if you want to give a look at our first of two play breakdown features. We've got a couple good ones up there for you to weigh in on, to comment on, and some, you know, pretty good examples of good football, something the Steelers have been playing over the last seven games, Lance. They've won 5 of 7. They had what I like to say, an almost complete game against the Browns. I don't think the offense did top to bottom enough in this game to say that it was a thoroughly dominant performance. At the same time, though, three stats really stood out to that game, and we're going to carry that into Thursday here in a second. The three stats in that game. One sack allowed. Some of that's the offensive line. Some of it is play calling, and some of it is Roethlisberger releasing the ball on schedule. Two, 5 sacks by the defense. Highest of the season, and it came from everywhere. When you get the pressure that they were getting, which is more important top to bottom than just sacks, you want pressure. When you're getting that, good things are going to happen, which leads us into the third stat. 4 takeaways. These are dominant success numbers. Are any of these things, are all of these things translatable into Thursday night's game against Baltimore? Lance, you're going to answer that in a second. We're just going to take a quick break here. You are listening to The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulon. He's Lance Williams. We will be right back. Welcome back. The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulon, managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. I am with Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio. We are recording this Tuesday before Thanksgiving, when the Steelers will take on the rival Baltimore Ravens in Week 13. Thanksgiving night. Big time game, big time environment. Lance, the key stats, and I'm going to say I'm right this time. The Steelers allowed 0 sacks against the Cleveland Browns, only 1 the previous week against the Detroit Lions. 1 sack in 2 weeks. 5 sacks of their own on the defensive side of the ball, and 5 takeaways. Key power stats we're talking about here. Is this sustainable? Can they continue this?
I think they can. And when you look at the first matchup against the Ravens, they gave up 3 sacks in that game and 4 quarterback hits. But I think when you look back at that game, you get the perception that the line, they really controlled the line of scrimmage in that Ravens game at home. They ran it well. And although they gave up 3 sacks, it didn't seem as if Ben was under a lot of duress in that game. That could all change on the road. But if you like the way that the offensive line is trending, you would suggest that they can indeed control the line of scrimmage. In the first matchup on defense, they got 1 sack against the Ravens. But the Ravens' offensive line has not been great this year. I don't think Eugene Monroe has provided the answer at the left tackle position that they were thinking. And even before the Browns game, they got 3 sacks against the Pats. They got 3 sacks against the Bills. They got a couple of sacks against the Lions. And, of course, they got the 5 sacks against the Browns. I think most impressive in those games were the 2 sacks against the Lions, because before that time, the Lions were the number 1 team in the National Football League in terms of giving up sacks and adjusted sack rate. To get 2 sacks against that unit is impressive. And also, what we've seen is that they've been playing with leads more often than not recently, so that's allowed the pressure to get home. So I think we're going to see it continue, but the caveat to that is the familiarity between these 2 divisional opponents. They've seen each other, they know their tendencies, and what they like to do on both sides of the ball in terms of pressure. So that could be the one caveat to buck the trend that we've seen over the last several weeks.
You know, if I had $1 million, of the many things that I'd bet it on, one of them would be the Baltimore Ravens getting at least 2 sacks in this game. 2 sacks in a game isn't a great number when you're looking at it, you know, on its head. Just sitting there where it is, ignore the situation that came up, ignore anything else that might have come along with it. 2 sacks, not a great number on its own. 3 sacks, if you spread that out each game over the course of the season, that's a good number. You know, it works like that when you look at it top to bottom. But the key thing is taking 2, in many ways, 2 drives away from a team. A sack results in an ended possession far more often than it doesn't. And to dip back into Super Bowl 45, one of the most impressive things the Green Bay Packers did in defeating the Steelers was the fact they had 3 scoring drives in that game when they allowed a sack. The Steelers did not force a punt or obviously a turnover on any drive they had in which they got a sack. That was rare for that team that year. It's still rare in the NFL, by and large. The key thing here, in my long-winded point, Lance, they're going to get sacks. That's a team that spent the entire offseason revamping their defense so they could get after the quarterback. Elvis Dumervil gets after the quarterback. Terrell Suggs gets after the quarterback. Terrell Suggs gets after Ben Roethlisberger like no other player in history. That's going to continue. Does the Steelers offense have enough to be able to overcome that? Caveat to that being, to use your phrase, the Steelers running game has to be a big part of that. And what's been consistent with the Steelers even during this winning streak is the fact they still cannot run the football. Knowing what the Ravens bring in their pass rush, knowing they can't run the ball, what are they going to do to counter the Ravens' defense in this game?
They're going to do exactly what they've done the last few games. They're going to try to run it. They're going to do some no huddle, and they're going to try to get the ball out of Ben's hands quickly and let Antonio Brown and Sanders and those wide receivers get yards after the catch.
Can you play no huddle on the road? Can you do that in Baltimore? You realize that these are Ravens fans who will likely have been drinking for the previous 28 to 30 hours before that game. Maybe they stopped for some turducken, I'm not sure. But they will be outside that stadium, hammered, for a long time before that game starts.
And I've been in that stadium for a Steelers-Ravens game. In fact, it was a game where Cordell hit Bobby Shaw, I believe, it was for an 80-yard touchdown pass. I mean, that dates me right there.
That clinched the division in 2001. I remember that game.
Absolutely. It was a raucous game. I think I was almost in the second-to-last row, so I was neck-deep in Raven fans with my jersey on, in terrible towel, yelling when that happened. and I survived. They're going to do what they do. Because when you look at this offensive line, although it's played better, I mean, they're going to do what they do. I don't think they can survive a, you know, a 5 to 7 step drop game. I think they're going to do what they're going to do. They had success running the ball in the first matchup. So I think you're going to see them try to spread the Ravens out, run out of 11 personnel, shotgun, no huddle. I think you're going to see a lot of what we've seen the last few weeks, tempo, and just trying to get the ball out and keeping Ben upright. But I think in this matchup, given the Ravens' offense, I think you can tread water. And I think that the difference in this game will come down to turnovers ultimately. I think that's going to be the rub in this ball game. But with the Ravens' offense, you can tread water. It's not a game where you feel like you've got to score every time you get it. So if they don't turn the ball over, tread water, take some shots, mixing some decent pass protection here and there, I think they'll have a solid shot to go on a road and win this game.
I agree with a lot of that, except for the no huddle part. I don't see them doing that. I don't think they're going to risk that. Let me put it this way. In the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, for those who care about that, I don't in any way, shape, or form. I just remember reading a story, and this is something that seems to be touched on all the time now when those games are coming up. They run close to 4 hours long, and it's because usually the pitchers take a particularly long amount of time before they get ready to throw. The batters are stepping out constantly, readjusting, mentally assessing the situation, and they say it's because these games mean so much now. You want to make sure that you have everything right, and it's kind of I don't want to say addicting thing, but it's contagious around both teams now to the point where they had to almost, you know, step in and tell them to hurry up after a bit. I see Ravens-Steelers games being very much like that. They're very conservative. They really sit two prize fighters circling each other. I just used two sports metaphors in the same rant, Lance. That ties the record, doesn't it? They wait to throw that punch. And that punch is what decides these games. It's always like that. Emmanuel Sanders' huge kickoff return. John Harbaugh's interesting decision to go for the onside kick. Those kinds of plays will come up eventually, and they seem to come up organically in these games. They'll see that the situation and the coaches will decide, I'm going to go for this right here. They'll try it. They'll win or lose the game based on that. But until that happens, they're circling around each other. They're not going to do much. No huddle doesn't fit in this game at all. It does not fit on the road in front of that crowd, of all crowds. That crowd in a primetime environment. They're not going to be able to do that. They need to suck the life out of the stadium as much as they can, and they need your 135-yard rushing performance, whatever it was that they had the last time they played. They're going to need to have that kind of performance up front. To counter what I was saying before about Pittsburgh's offense versus Baltimore's defense, Pittsburgh offensively needs to protect the passer, obviously, but they need to get something of a running game going in this particular matchup. The Ravens are getting far better in their back seven than they were to start the year. This team is improving in a lot of ways. Not enough yet to put together a consistent winning streak over the second half of the year. They might be able to do that with an emotionally charged win here, and that's really going to be done by their ability to stop the Steelers' much more methodical and much more disciplined passing game. How many times did Ben go into Big Ben mode against Cleveland? I don't even know if he did.
None. I mean, he just stepped
up in
the pocket.
Threw up the duck to Brown. I think in retrospect, he's going to see that as something he shouldn't have done, considering how strong the wind brought the ball back and how far Brown got down the field before having to come back. That could have been a turnover. How huge would a turnover have been in that particular case? Those are the kinds of risks he can't take against Baltimore. I don't know if he can resist it either. Suggs is bearing down on him. He wants to make a play. He wants to be the hero. He wants to hear Collinsworth gushing all over him. He's going to try to make those plays. Can he do that?
Let me add to your use of sports metaphor. So, and I agree, as I hear you say it, it makes a little bit more sense than using the no huddle. So I'll backtrack on that. Because I think you're right in the sense that these games basically represent the rope-a-dope. I mean, these are rope-a-dope games. And both teams are trying to be, you know, Ali. And at points and times in these matchups, sometimes the team is George Foreman. And both teams are sort of just rope-a-doping, waiting for that next team or either one of them to make that mistake. And in a rope-a-dope game, you know, can the Steelers win a rope-a-dope game on the road? I mean, but I think you're absolutely right. They're going to need the 19 attempts, 93 yards, 4.5 yards per carry performance that Le'Veon Bell had in that first game to go on the road and be successful. And it'll be interesting to see if they can get it. But you're right, especially looking at statistically the first game. It's a game where, you know, Ben is 17 of 23, but he only has 160 yards passing. What does that suggest? Low yards per attempt. Why? Being conservative, being safe, you know, waiting to take advantage of some mistakes from the other team to be able to pounce and be able to win that game.
Both teams are like that in a lot of ways, simply because of what's at stake in these games. They're not going to help the other team make the critical big play on them. If the other team is going to make the big play, they're going to need to do it themselves. And the Steelers, back when they were winning championships and beating the Ravens to do that, they had the players that were making those plays. The Santonio Holmes, the James Harrisons, Troy Polamalu. The legacy of those players in this game was that big play. A big gainer, a big time sack, a forced fumble. The Steelers last year set Batch up. You know, Batch walked out of there the hero, and that was great and everything, but Harrison had the sack and the fumble that set that up. Point being, when you have playmakers on the field in this game, they're going to wait to take, you know, they may even sacrifice, you know, something small here and there in order to make the big play. We're going to see that. I don't think Joe Flacco is going to go out of his way to throw deep throughout the game. I do think he's going to try to go after Ike Taylor with Torrey Smith the way that he often does. In particular, after watching Ike Taylor play last week, I'm not going to suggest that Taylor was hurt, but he did not look the same aggressive kind of cornerback that he is. Either the game plan was basically to concede 8 yards to Josh Gordon all game, or he was really protecting himself deep. Baltimore is going to notice that. They're going to try that early. If the Steelers can withstand that, keep the crowd down, get the ball back early and control the tempo, yeah, they can certainly win this game. But it's going to come down largely to their ability to negate big plays as well as make them. I'm Neil Coulong, managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams of Steel Curtain Radio. You are listening to The Standard is Standard. We'll be right back. Let's get into predictions. It's Baltimore -1 right now. Who are you taking in this game? What's the final score and why?
I think everything that we've seen from this team, specifically their ability to get turnovers, not turn the ball over themselves, they're scoring more points, they're running it a tad bit better. They're still struggling a touch situationally in running the football as well as in the red zone. They have a little bit of struggle on third down offense, but things are trending upward. If you look at both teams, I think it's clear to say right now that the Steelers are playing better football than the Ravens. But with that being said, there was a 27-point quarter against Detroit. They got taken to the woodshed by the Patriots. I mean, twice by the Patriots. This is a road game. It is a short week off of a road game. Injuries to McClendon. I think it's going to be a tall order for the Steelers to go into Baltimore and get this win. Although I think they're playing the better football, I'm going to pick the Ravens to get this win. I'm going to pick the Ravens to beat the Steelers 21-16. I think the Steelers are going to move the ball effectively. I think they're going to play good football, but where they're going to struggle is in the red zone, where they're going to kick some field goals and not get some touchdowns in those situations. They'll probably go less than 50% in the red zone, maybe get three trips, score one touchdown. I don't know how it works out. You guys do the math, several, multiple red zone trips, but only convert maybe one touchdown and kick more field goals and not be able to actually beat this team. So I'm going to pick the Ravens to win again, 21-16.
Here's a trivia question. Somebody leave the answer in the comments because I'm not looking it up at the moment. When was the last time these two teams have played and not one field goal was kicked? Either of the two teams not having a field goal. Is that recent? Is that a long time ago? I don't know, but it's hard to even think about this game without field goals being a factor in some way. And usually it's exactly what you said. It's a failed touchdown opportunity. They're not always long field goals. The bulk of them are short, I think. At least that's the gut feeling. I am going to disagree with you. The reason I'm going to disagree with you is the same reason I was griping about earlier. In a short week, preparation is key, and you lean on familiarity, right? There's not a whole lot of tape on the Steelers' defense the way that it's playing right now. There is not a whole lot of tape on Will Allen being on the field. Not a whole lot of tape of Jason World's coming off the outside edge from the opposite side he's been playing all year. Not a whole lot of tape on Jarvis Jones blitzing the A-gap. They've got tape on Troy Polamalu playing inside linebacker, but they have to lean on the stuff that they had when he was playing strong safety. He could do either in this game. They don't really have any idea. The team that's in more trouble as far as preparation goes, in my opinion, is the Ravens. As far as what you said, I agree with you. The Steelers are going to struggle in the red zone because they've struggled all year in the red zone. I don't see why that's going to change now. But I think the Steelers on defense have more of an element of surprise to throw at Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens offense. Flacco, as we talked about offline, has played well enough against the Steelers over the last several games to look at him as a significant threat in this game. I'm not Mike Tomlin. Fortunately for Steelers Nation, I have nothing to do with calling the plays of this game or setting up their preparation for the week. But what I'm looking at and watching this team play and watching their past games, the Steelers need to come up with something new to go at Joe Flacco. He's seen everything that they throw at him. No quarterback is more prepared right now to play the Steelers than Flacco is. If they come at him with the same stuff that they have, they're going to get the same results. And he played not a great game, but a very steady and, to use an inappropriate phrase, a flawless game. He didn't turn the ball over. He didn't make a whole lot of bad throws. He took from the Steelers exactly what they gave him, and it probably should have resulted in more points. He doesn't have a whole lot of help around him on the offensive side of the ball, but to win this game, they're going to need to get him to make mistakes. I think they can do that. So I'm picking the Steelers to win, and it's going to be, I hate doing scores, 20-17. Steelers cover, Steelers win. Steelers are back to 500 after an 0-4 start and are still alive for a playoff berth in the AFC, which was all but unheard of a month and a half ago, Lance. That's what I know. You've been listening to The Standard Is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio. We're going to be back at you next week at some point after the game, getting ready for the Mike Wallace Bowl, Lance. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all later.